Thank you, worship team. Like we had a lot of people in our early service so they could go out and enjoy the beautiful weather today before it actually gets fall at some point in time. Not sure when it's going to happen, but welcome. It's great to see you guys worshiping with us this morning. Grab your notes, and as we do that, I want us to have just a special time of prayer this morning for Beth Oaks. Beth Oaks is our missionary who's been serving in Kenya. She's been serving at the Tanya Center. It's a school for special needs kids. For the last 2 years, and she's been planning for a couple of months now to return back to the States. And she had originally planned to do that in mid-November, but I don't know if you've been following any of the election stuff going on in Kenya, but they had an election in August, which went very, very well by election standards in Kenya. They've had a lot of violence in their elections in the past years, and so they went very well, and then courts overturned the elections. They nullified it and insisted on a new election within 60 days, which is difficult in any community, any culture. And that's coming up this Thursday, their re-elections. And just the tensions have really ratcheted up over the last few weeks there in Kenya, all around in the various counties. And so the folks at Tanya Center asked Beth if she could move up her timeline so that she was able to get out of the country before the elections take place. It felt like it'd be safer for her and for them traveling to and from Nairobi to get her to the airport. So she's coming home tomorrow, and they're 8 hours ahead, so she doesn't have very much time there. So pray for her. It was really short notice to shift gears that quickly, so she didn't get to do some of the things she wanted to do to have some closure before she left, but better safe than sorry, so we'll be happy to have her here on the ground early Tuesday morning. So it's a long flight. I think she has a two-hour flight to Dubai, and then it's a 14-hour flight from there on into Dulles. So that's a challenge. So pray for her as she travels over the next couple of days. Pray for Kenya in general, and keep an eye on things as Thursday approaches, and just pray more specifically as that we get close to the election. Pray for our friends there at Gospel Centers International, which we've had a long-term partnership with, as they serve that area. It's a large church, and so they have a lot of influence and are trying to lead things to be peaceful in their community, and they have churches throughout the country in almost every or several counties within the country. So just pray for church leaders as well as they try to lead through a peaceful process. Let's go to God in prayer. God, we just want to give you thanks for just the last 2 years that Beth has had to serve in Kenya at the Tanya Center, and just for some of the things she's been able to accomplish there. I thank you for the impact that she's had on the students there and their lives. I thank you for the impact she's had on that school and helping them to move forward in some areas and get some things in place that they desperately needed put in place. And so I just pray for her as she gets ready to leave and to relocate back home, that you would just be with that her during that transition over the next couple of days. Just help her to have the best time she can, saying goodbye to folks and just some closure. And then just keep her safe as she travels and arrives here. And just be with her as she transitions back over the next few weeks and even the next few months as she just processes the last 2 years, as she determines what's next for her, as she just goes through that re-entry process. Just watch over her and give her everything that she needs. And then I just pray for Kenya as they get closer and closer to this re-election. I pray that things would be just as peaceful as they possibly could be. I pray for the church leaders there, like Pastor Charles and Pastor Simon and Titus and others who are leading their churches and in their communities through hopefully a peaceful process. I pray for their government and all of the leaders there as well. And then, guys, thank you for this opportunity that we have to come and to worship you and to focus on you. So open our hearts and open our minds to what you want us to know. In Christ's name I pray, amen. So we're in the middle of this series that we're calling David, and we're just walking through the life of David and looking at some of the things that he went through and dealt with and some of the experiences that he had and some of the lessons that he learned and how do they apply to us as followers of Jesus. And so this is week three. We've got two more weeks on the other end, so don't miss them. On week one, we looked at an event in David's life when he was just 15 years old, and it was an incredible moment that actually led to him becoming the most popular person in all of Israel and the surrounding region and the territories there. And he fought and he defeated Goliath, right? And we've heard that story. Even if you didn't grow up in church, you've You've heard the story or heard of the story of Goliath, most likely. It was one of the highest moments in David's life. And then last week we looked at one of the lowest moments in David's life. He had to flee his own country, a country that he loved and had served and risked his life for over and over again, because the king Saul was after him and wanted him dead and was trying to have him arrested and killed and all of that. And he found himself, like all of us do at times in our lives, he found himself alone, angry, and afraid. And we looked at those three emotions, and we talked about how those three emotions led David to panic and to kind of take matters into his own hands, to forget that God was on his side and was working for him. And so he took matters in his own hands, and it were disastrous outcomes. If you missed last week's message, I highly encourage you to check that out online, because it applies to every one of us in the room. Today we're going to talk about, we're going to look at two characters, two people that had an incredible influence on David's life, negative and positive. We're going to look at King Saul. We've talked about him a good bit already, but we're going to look a little bit more at King Saul. And we're going to look at King Saul's son, Jonathan. And Saul is the current king of Israel. He was the first king of Israel. He's the one that David will ultimately follow as king and take over as the throne from him. Come back next week. We're going to actually talk about how David became the king of Israel. It's an incredible, incredible story, full of lots of drama. But what you see in King Saul, if you read through 1 Samuel and you look at his life, what you see in King Saul is you see a guy who is experiencing kind of this slow spiritual self-destruction in his life. But it wasn't always like that. Saul was, at one point, he was a person who worshiped God. He was a person who pursued a relationship with God. He was someone whose faith and trust was in God, but then his faith just begins to kind of unravel spiritually. Saul was a guy who had great potential as a leader when he became the king, but he let his character flaws kind of get in the way of all that. And the character issue that he struggled with the most was ultimately what brought him down, and it was the character issue of envy. It was envy. Saul was consumed with envy over David. And 1 Samuel chapter 18, we kind of begin to see this destructive work of envy in Saul's life. So I want to read this passage, and then we'll pause and unpack it a little bit. But this part of Scripture, just to let you know where it is in the timeline, this takes place right after David has defeated Goliath. And if you remember, after he killed Goliath, David walks over to Goliath, picks up Goliath's own sword, right, and decapitates him. He cuts his head off, beheads him. And then we looked last week in our story how David actually kept that sword as a souvenir. I mean, who wouldn't, right? He later gave it to the high priest as a dedication to God. But he saves the sword. But then he goes, right after he beheads Goliath, he goes to actually meet with King Saul. King Saul wants to see him, wants to have a conversation with him and find out more about who this David kid is and all that. So David walks into King Saul's tent holding Goliath's head in his hand. I mean, it's an incredible story. In this chapter 17 tells us this. So the conversation that we're going to start with, the first part of it, this happens right at the beginning of this passage. David is standing there. He's talking to King Saul, and while he's talking to him, he's holding Goliath's head in his hand, as if to say, okay, King Saul, go ahead and say whatever it is you want to say, but don't forget what I just did, right? I mean, it must have been an intimidating image there. So here it is. After David had finished talking to Saul while he's holding his Goliath's head in his hand, Jonathan, who is Saul's son, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. So some time has gone by, and Jonathan and David have become really, really close friends. They have this incredibly close relationship and bond together. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. So Saul recognized this guy has some ability, some talents. I'm going to keep him around. He's also got some influence, so I'm going to keep my eye on him. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. And Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. And I'll explain why he did that in just a couple of minutes. Whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops, and Saul's officers as well. So everything's going pretty well for Saul, and everything's going good for David. Saul's kind of hired David. He's advanced him in his position. He's still only 15 or 16 years old. He's doing a great, great job. Everybody's happy. Saul's happy. The military people are happy. So it's all going well. And then it says this, when the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing. So that's good, right? With joyful songs and with tambourines and lyres. And so that's good. And it says, as they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. So now things start to kind of go downhill between Saul and David. Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. So they have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? In other words, what else is he going to do? Take the kingdom away from me? And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. And other translations say that Saul kept a jealous eye or an envious eye on David. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the lyre, and he, as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away from him and gave him command over 1,000 men. And remember last week we talked about when David traveled, you heard him before he got there because he traveled with 1,000 personal warriors. And so this was them. And David led the troops in their campaigns. In everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns. Now, there's a lot going on here with King Saul. I mean, there's some fear. There's some anger. He's concerned about his kingdom and his place there. But envy is what is at the heart of what's going on here. Saul is envious of David and the success that he's having. And as we'll see in the life of Saul, envy can have this devastating effect on your life, on your relationships, and ultimately on your soul. And so I want us to look at three things this morning. I want us to look at the source of envy, and then we're going to look at the effects of envy. What does it do to our lives? And then what is the path beyond envy for those of us who are followers of Jesus? So first, the source of envy. After David had defeated Goliath, Saul put David in this high-ranking position in the military very, very quickly. And David did a really great job in that position. In fact, David did such a great job that Saul continued to entrust David with more and more stuff. And when David and Saul would come back from these battles, the women, it was cultural, the women would come out, welcome the heroes back, and they would sing these songs to them, and they would dance. And the song that they sang was this, that Saul has slain his thousands and David has slain his tens of thousands. And this is where we first see Saul's envy kind of pop up in his life. And there are several ways that Saul could have responded to this, right? I mean, certainly that way, but he also could have been really pleased with that song and what the people were saying. He could have recognized, hey, I'm the one that put David in that place in the first place, right? I mean, I'm the guy who saw David's potential. I'm the one who recognized his talents. I'm the one who allowed him to go out and represent the armies of Israel in the first place with Goliath. So I'm the one who put him in the position for success. So his successes, well, they're my successes too. And so I'm gonna respect that. That's what happens in a healthy relationship, isn't it? That when you entrust responsibility to someone and they're successful, you celebrate what they've experienced. So Saul could have been pleased with this, but he's not. He's not pleased. Instead, he was filled with envy, and he immediately began to compare himself to David. And here's what he said. He said, Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. And this is what Saul says. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but they've only credited me with thousands. So here's the first thing that you just need to know about envy is the source of envy is comparison. Every time. That when we begin to compare ourselves to someone else, we begin to compare our talents to someone else's, our abilities to someone else's, our grades to someone else's, our status to someone else's, our salaries, our house, our jobs, our cars, our experiences, whatever it is, when we begin to compare, we move into a dark place spiritually very, very quickly. And so let me ask you a question, and this is a rhetorical question, so please don't raise your hand, and don't nudge anybody next to you, and don't point to anybody, because this is about you, it's not about them, but just a little bit of self-reflection. And the question is this: what is your default response? What is your default response? I mean, just be honest with yourself. What is your default response when someone you know, someone you're in relationship with, someone you work with, someone you're a neighbor of, someone you go to school with, someone you know at church, someone who's in your family, what is your default response when someone you know gets something that you don't have, or experiences something you've never experienced, or does something better than you've ever done it, and they get credit for that? What is your default response in those situations? Is it celebration? Or is it comparison? Are you able to share in their joy, or do you immediately begin to compare what you have with what they have, with what they've experienced, with what you've experienced, with what they've accomplished and what you've accomplished? You see, envy makes everything about you. Envy makes everything about me. And whatever everyone else has, what everyone else has experienced, all of that becomes about you because you're comparing. So the source of envy is comparison. Now let's talk about the effects of envy. Because there's just this incredible, as we see in the life of Saul, this incredible destructive power that envy has on our lives, and it has on our relationships with others, and ultimately it has on our relationship with God. And you see, Saul was filled with more and more envy towards David, and so he began to act in more and more destructive ways. It says this: the next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the lyre, as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, "I'll pin David to the wall." But David eluded him twice. Now, if you look at the whole story in 1 Samuel, you'll see that Saul actually tries to kill David 6 different times. And at first, his attempts to kill David are very, very covert. They happen in the palace, kind of outside of the public view and all of that. Or he tries in a very covert way to get David to marry one of his daughters, because he knows that if David marries his daughter, then as the son-in-law of the king, he's going to be a huge target when he goes out into battle. And sometimes he just places David in some of the most difficult combat situations that there were, and he would send him out often, hoping that his enemies would actually do to David what Saul wanted to do, which was to kill him. So it's all of these covert attempts to kill David. But then things begin to change, and as he becomes more and more consumed with envy. And that's just the way envy works in our lives. It always causes us to become more and more consumed with whoever we're comparing ourselves with. And eventually Saul doesn't care anymore. He doesn't care who knows that he's trying to kill David. I mean, it's become public knowledge that he's trying to kill David. He's sending out troops. He's put the word out. You know, last week we looked at how he just exploded at dinner one night, his entire family, and accused them all of being with David and of being against him. And he said, "David must die," and all that. So he doesn't care who knows that he's trying to kill David anymore. And envy tends to have that kind of destructive effect on our lives. It tends to consume us, doesn't it? It tends to consume us. And the interesting thing about envy is, no matter how great your life is, and no matter how much you have, and no matter how much success you see, and no matter how many great experiences you have, envy keeps you from enjoying those things, because you're constantly consumed with comparing yourself to the other people in your lives and what they have and what you don't. So that's the source of envy. And that's the effect of envy on our lives. If we want to build our character as followers of Christ, we have to figure out, what is the path beyond envy? And in our story, Jonathan is the character in this story who shows us the path beyond envy. And it's interesting to me that Jonathan, as the son of the king, Jonathan actually has the most to lose if David becomes the king, doesn't he? I mean, because if David becomes king, Jonathan is the heir to the throne as the son's king. And if David becomes king, he loses all of that. He loses his right to the throne. He loses all the riches that go with the throne. He loses all the perks that go with being royalty. He loses all of that if David becomes the king. So how does Jonathan respond to all of David's successes? How does Jonathan respond to the growing popularity of David with the people of Israel? And how does Jonathan respond to the fact that it seems like God is blessing David and that David is ultimately going to be the king? This is how Jonathan responds. It's in the story. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. And Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and he gave it to David along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Now, Jonathan shows us the path beyond envy, and he shows us that it starts with this, that it starts with the rejecting of any notion of entitlement in our lives. That if we're gonna find the path beyond envy in our lives, then we have to reject the notion of a sense of entitlement in our lives. Envy grows out of that. It grows out of the sense of entitlement. It grows out of the sense that I deserve what I have, and I deserve what I have accomplished. And the reason that we become envious of other people is that we believe on some level that they're receiving something that, well, maybe they don't deserve that. Maybe it's because they're too young, or maybe it's because they're too inexperienced and they haven't put in enough effort yet or whatever. Maybe it's because it just seems like things just come way too easy for them. But on some level, envy in our lives grows out of this sense of somehow I deserve what I have in my life. But these other people, I'm not so sure they deserve what they have. Now, in the story, if anyone is in a position to feel entitled in this story, it's Jonathan, isn't it? Because Jonathan's the heir to the throne. But we don't see that sense of entitlement in Jonathan. From his perspective, no one is entitled to be king, and not even the son of the king. Jonathan sees even the kingship as an act of grace. He sees it as a gift from God. For Jonathan, being king is not something that someone earns or someone is entitled to. So rather than responding in envy towards David, he makes a covenant friendship with David. And that's what happens when you and I, when we reject the notion of entitlement in our lives, we begin to see everything that we have as a gift from God. We begin to see everything that we have as a result of grace. And when we do that, it's almost impossible to be envious. And all of us struggle with this at some point in our lives. All of us deal with this. And I know in my own life, when I deal with envy, it's just because I forget. And I just forget that everything I have in my life is because of grace. And everything that I do in life is a gift from God. And it's when I forget that I find this sense of envy growing in my life towards other people, and I develop this sense that they're getting something that they don't deserve, that they haven't earned, or maybe they're getting something that should actually be mine. Here's something else that Jonathan shows us, is the path beyond envy. It involves being able to rejoice in the victories of others. I mean, Jonathan doesn't become envious of David's victory. Jonathan, if you read the story, he actually enters in to David's victories. In fact, David's victories become Jonathan's victories. David's joy becomes Jonathan's joy. And now why is that? I mean, why is it that he's able to do that? Why is it that he's able to be joyful for David in all of his success? Well, the story tells us it's because Jonathan loved David. It's because Jonathan loved David. And in fact, it says, as himself. See, that's what happens when you really begin to love someone. That's what happens when you really begin to understand what Jesus said was the most important thing in life, was to love God and to love others as ourself. And Jonathan, the text tells us, loved David as himself. And that's what happens when you love someone deeply. That love causes us not to just look at the victories of others from the outside, but that love allows us to enter into their victories and to share in those victories and their joy with us. Love causes us to be every bit as happy when something good happens to someone we love as when it happens to us. So when someone you love experiences some grace, then it's never this sense of, well, when is it my turn? Or when they experience something great in their life, it's never this sense of, you know, that's great for them, but when do I get a chance? Because when you love someone, their victories become your victories. Their joy becomes your joy. In fact, when we're envious towards other people who are close to us, it speaks volumes about how we actually love that person. And then here's the third thing, or the last thing that Jonathan shows us, is the path towards beyond envy. It's that it requires us to be willing to give up the throne. That we have to be willing to give up the throne. In the culture that David and Jonathan lived in, if a king decided, for whatever reason, if a king decided to give up their throne, he would place his robe on the throne as a sign that he was giving up all claims to that throne, now and into future, that could never be reclaimed again. He's saying, this is no longer my throne. This is no longer my right. I give this up. And they would place the robe over the throne, saying, I abdicate this. This thing that I have, I abdicate it to you. I'm giving up this right. So when Jonathan gives David his robe, and when he gives him his sword and his bow and his belt, Jonathan is literally giving him the things that represent his crown rights. And he's saying, David, I abdicate this to you. I give you the future thing that I was supposed to have. I give you the throne. I give it up to you because I recognize it's rightfully yours. Now, why does Jonathan do that? It's not because of his friendship with David. And it's not because Jonathan was a weak leader. In fact, if you read through 1 Samuel, you'll see that Jonathan was actually an incredibly, incredibly strong leader. But he does that because if you read through the story, Jonathan does that. He gives up his future position as king because he sees God's saving activity at work in David's life. He sees God working in David in an incredible way that's going to make an incredible difference in the life of Israel and ultimately the world. And Jonathan knows that the only way he can participate in what God is doing in the world and in the country is to give up the throne and to give up his crown rights to David. Now, the New Testament reminds us of two really important things that are connected to this Old Testament story. And one of the things that the New Testament reminds us of is that Jesus is the ultimate Jonathan. In fact, the Apostle Paul, when he was writing to the Philippians in the church at Philippi, he described this abdication of the throne, and this giving up of kingly rights that Jesus did when he went to the cross. And here's how Paul describes it. He says, Jesus, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Paul's reminding us that Jesus, when he came to this earth, he gave up his rights. That the essence of the incarnation of Christ, that the essence of the story of Christmas and the essence of the story of Easter is Jesus' willingness to give up his crown rights. Why? Here's why. Because Jesus loves seeing people get things that they don't deserve. I mean, the reason we're all here today is because we have received that which we did not deserve, which we did not earn ourselves, right? Forgiveness and grace and hope and a different story. And it's only when we recognize that we're able to offer that same kind of grace and that same kind of love that doesn't reflect envy to the people in our lives. And then there's another thing the New Testament reminds us of, and it's connected to this Old Testament story, and it's this, that if we're going to be in relationship with Jesus, that if we're going to be in relationship with the one who was willing to give up his kingly rights and take the role of a servant, if we're going to be in a relationship with him, that we have to do what Jonathan did. That we have to be willing to give up the throne of our lives. That we have to be willing to come to a place where we say, I renounce the idea that I'm the king of my life. And I renounce the idea that I'm in charge, and I take the sword, and I take the bow, and I take the belt, and I place the robe, and I place it there, and I say, Jesus, this is yours. I give over my kingly position to you because you are the anointed one. because I see that it's in you that God is working in this world to bring about salvation, and the only way I can be a part of that is to give this over to you. Now, that's not an easy decision, is it? I mean, that can be an incredibly difficult thing for people to do. And a lot of you, you made that decision a long, long time ago. And some of you, maybe you thought you made that decision, but you're beginning to realize maybe you really didn't. And then for others, maybe you've never made that decision, and it's hard to make that decision to surrender your life to Christ. I mean, King Saul couldn't do it, could he? He couldn't give up the throne to what God was doing, and it led to spiritual destruction in his life. But maybe today is your day to step across that line, to step across that line of faith and say, God, as much as I understand, I want you to be on the throne of my life. You know, I read this story and I thought how easy it is for envy to kind of stay hidden in our lives, and it's easy to hide it. And it's a character issue that you and I, we can walk around with, and no one will ever even know it's there. But it will ultimately affect you from the inside out. It'll affect your relationships. It'll affect your relationship with the people closest to you, and ultimately your relationship with God. So do your part to move past envy. Take the path that Jonathan laid out for us and move past it. Now, next week, we're going to pick up the story right there. And we're actually going to see how David became the king of Israel. And it's an incredibly dramatic story. So don't miss next week. Let me pray for you. God, I thank you for Jonathan. And I thank you that just like David, he was able to see things that other people just couldn't see. He was able to recognize your work that other people couldn't recognize. And I thank you for the steps that he took. I thank you for the relationship that he had with David that ultimately helped David to succeed in being king and being the person that he was. And God, all of us, we struggle with some of the things that Saul struggled with. We struggle with envy. And we see people in our lives and we see them having successes and getting experiences and moving forward, and we don't recognize that in our lives and we wonder why. And it's so easy to begin to compare. And it's so easy for comparison to move to envy and for envy to move us into some dark places. So help us to take the path beyond that. Help us to follow Jonathan's path. And ultimately, God, help us to be able to surrender our lives, all of our lives, to you and allow you to be the king of the throne of our lives, guiding everything that we do. In Christ's name I pray. Amen.